Hi, my name's Christian.
And my name is Nash, and you're listening to Beyond the Bake Sale,
where we help you raise more time, talent, and treasure in innovative, creative, and effective ways for the causes you care about. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Bake Sale. My name is Christian.
And my name is Nash.
And today we have a special guest, as we always do, Mr. Eric Collard of the Ottawa Media Group from right here in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. Eric, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, we're very excited to have you to really run down, especially for today, as we always do. We like to help people raise more time, talent, and treasure. But for this episode especially, we're really going to talk about that awareness building for causes that people care about, whether you're from a professional shop or whether you're from a more volunteer context. And we're really excited to kind of hear some of your stories. But before we do that, we're going to jump right into a little bit of your bio. And you really have a quite unique and interesting career, Eric. For those listening in, Eric spends his days as the managing partner of the Ottawa Media Group, a full-fledged communications firm that has access to close to 20 of the best minds in Canada in media training, communication strategy, and event management. And when he's not giving workshops or presenting at conferences, he's helping clients merge the time-tested principles of public relations with the new online realities. A former journalist, he's spoken across North America on communications and interwebs, which is obviously a technical term, stuff over the past 7 years. And when Eric isn't in his full-time role, he enjoys doing what he can for his community with his position on the Kids Up Front Ottawa and Banff Avenue Community House, serving on their board of directors. And also, in case that wasn't enough for you already, he's also the co-founder of Amazing People, a local movement here in Ottawa helping to shine a light on amazing people doing amazing things in Ottawa, as well as regionally, nationally, and internationally. Eric, this is a lot of really fantastic stuff. I think what we'd like to start with first is kind of diving into Ottawa Media Group part. Can you tell us a little bit about the Ottawa Media Group and kind of your inspiration in helping to found it and helping to be a part of it, essentially?
Actually, Amazing People started the Ottawa Media Group. It's going to be 4 years in a few months. We're a full-fledged public relations firm. But I think one of the things that makes us stand out is we do have a big heart. We do have a place for the community. We got started in the community. The two of us, the two founders are both community-minded. My business partner, Timothy Walker, for those in Ottawa, is a former CTV Ottawa anchor, and she's been in the community for 20-plus years. And we learned a lot from going to community events and hearing what people have to say. And most people, when they think of a public relations firm, they don't think of someone giving back, or they don't think of a firm giving back, and they don't think of people being involved in the community. They think of, you know, chasing emergencies or always spinning the message. But we really try to be able to obviously do some great work with some big clients, but also be able to be accessible, having some rates that are accessible to the smaller folks that don't really have access to the professional services that they might otherwise like to get access to.
Yeah, most definitely. And are there any particular stories that stick with you through kind of those formative times that really encouraged you to want to go out with Timothy and start the Ottawa Media Group?
Yeah, so I can take you back about 12 years ago. I was working at City Hall. I was doing media relations in the city. And I met Timothy at a community event. And then we kind of just chatted. And it was one of those things. I was attending on behalf of the city, and she was attending on behalf of CTV. And then we kind of struck up a friendship over the year. And then when I left the city, we started doing some charity work together. And that became, she had a series on CTV called Amazing People. And she came to me looking for some help in doing an event. And it was one of those things that I had some events under my belt previously. And it was one of those things where it was such a cool story. And it was the amazing people that she profiled were not the usual suspects that you would hear about all the time. All the people getting awards, all the people getting media attention. It was usually like the level below, or not in terms of people, but in terms of exposure. So it was folks that would do some really cool stuff in the community, but they were kind of under a rock or not as proficient in the media game. So it was kind of a nice way to be able to shed some light on some really cool stories. And then also, by the same token, raise some money for some local charity. Around the same time, I met a young man by the name of John Tam, who was doing some work for Schoolbox. And so Schoolbox, for those who don't know, is a charity based just outside of Ottawa in a little town called Amok. And they built schools in Nicaragua involving local people. They just finished their 100th classroom in Nicaragua. And there's been a bunch of people from the region that have been down there to build some schools. And as life would kind of have it, all these things kind of came together. Timothy asking me to help with an event for to showcase some of her folks. My involvement in Schoolbox, I said, why don't we kind of put this together? There's obviously a few more people involved, right? And then this kind of happened, and next thing you know, our first amazing people gala came together, and we had close to 500 people in the room. We raised about $50,000. And I still remember sitting on stage with Timothy before we started the proceeding. And I don't know if you've ever emceed an event, but usually the lights are on you, so you can kind of see the audience, but not really. And I'm looking over, and I'm like, wow, this is, and we're going to be overusing the word amazing, but this is pretty amazing. You know, like it started from an idea on a patio somewhere, and next thing you know, this is actually happening and we're having some impact. And I remember talking to Tom Affleck, who was the founder and executive director at the time of Schoolbox. And he says, you don't understand how much this money is going to have an impact in Nicaragua. And I was like, yeah, that's amazing. That's why we're doing this stuff, is to be able to shed some light on cool local people and then hopefully create some impact down the road. And then he's like, no, you don't understand. Until you go down to Nicaragua and see, you're not going to truly capture or really feel the essence of the impact. And he was pretty right. When I went down to Nicaragua, stuff we take for granted.
That's incredible, Eric. And just to keep this kind of momentum going around the Amazing People Gala, what have been some of those stories that have most kind of inspired you and that you think have been very demonstrative in showing how people can really move beyond that kind of bake sale model when it comes to raising, you know, time, talent, treasure, as well as awareness for causes that people really care about.
There's so many. I'll highlight a few. One of them was a local lady named Peggy Taillon, who was actually one of our first Amazing People of the Year. She went to Kenya and would try to adopt a local Kenyan kid, and because she was single, they wouldn't allow them to adopt back then. So she fought to be able to change those laws so that a single person can adopt a kid. And in that movement, actually raised an entire village that was ravaged by the AIDS epidemic. And then now, over the years, she's raised thousands of dollars and put in a classroom down there and put in a resource center so that people can have access to the internet. And locally, she's raised a lot of awareness. And the thing I like about her model is she tries to bring the skills of the folks down there and then leverage that to sell goods or services that those folks have produced, and then give back that money, obviously with a little bit of markup, bring back that money to those communities. So, you know, they've got some clothing or some trinkets that people down there built, and then they sell them here, and then the money goes back to the charity. So it's a bit of a win-win. So folks are getting something back. And then the folks down there feel like they're useful. So it's not just a handout, because that's one of the drawbacks of some of the charities, is it's just basically they're going in there and doing a handout and hopefully it works. Whereas if you really involve the folks and make them feel valued, and it's very similar to the Schoolbox story. The people that get a school down in Nicaragua, the whole community is behind it. They cook for the volunteers. They welcome the volunteers. They do tours. The children show their appreciation. So it really makes you feel valued. And it becomes more of a true transaction, as opposed to just like us privileged folks just donating stuff to the less privileged. So it's, that's been a really cool story. And then there's also a lot of local people. Like, someone as simple as your neighbor that you don't know the struggles they're going through. And even though they're going through those struggles, they're still taking time to raise money or awareness for causes that are really dear to their heart, even though they're going through hell. But they're saying, you know what? I've been through it, and I don't want anyone else to go through it. So here's what I'm going to do to give back.
Oh, that's honestly amazing. So just so I can backtrack a little bit to that first story that you shared with the individual who essentially helped to change the laws and raise awareness about this really important cause in Kenya. Have you heard about, or did you ever had a chance to talk to them about any of the specific strategies or tactics or things that they did to raise that awareness, as well as raise some of those funds to help with that particular effort?
Not all of it. I mean, we've been involved, and the cool thing that we've done with Peggy is Timothy, with her association with CTV, actually went down to Kenya and shot a documentary that aired on W5, and it to showcase Peggy's reunion with the village that her son Devlin was came from. So again, it's to go back to that, those stories. It's more than just giving, sponsoring a child in the third world. It's actually creating those links and creating those real true connections. So I really, and she goes back all the time, and her partner, Wendy, have done some great stuff. But it's, again, it's the thing I like about stories like that is it's a true partnership where, yes, obviously Peggy's probably a little better off than some of the folks down in that village, but it's a long-term thing, and it's a really two-way, it's a true partnership.
No, most definitely. And I think that the part that strikes it at home for me so much is the value that they put, Peggy, as well as all these other individuals you're talking about, the value that they put on the other side's contribution. Even when people might not think they have anything to contribute, or they might be on the receiving end, they also are being respected for the value they're bringing to that relationship, whether it's their local connections on the ground or their local knowledge about the issue at hand, or just even their local relationships with people to really leverage that change. And I think that's probably an important part that a lot of our listeners at home can really drive home, is respecting that value that both sides bring in any relationship that you have, to really make sure that change is something that's really remarkable.
Yeah, you brought up a good point. It should be, if you want that something to happen that's going to last a while, it has to be a relationship. It has to be a two-way relationship. And that's where we're lucky with the amazing people. We're bombarded with people that want to be involved. But it's like, okay, why do you want to be involved? Is it a long-term mm-hmm. thing, as opposed to just a, okay, well, let's be involved for a month and then move on. For us,
definitely.
That's not where the value is.
So. No, that's so true. Yeah, no, absolutely. And you want to respect everyone's contribution, but there are certain times where a certain contribution is necessary, and other times when it can wait, or it's just not the right time or place for it. So changing gears a little bit, Eric, I'd love to talk about some of your work with some of your clients, whether they were the rather large ones or the smaller ones, particularly in the nonprofit charitable kind of cause space. Are there any kind of standout stories of really great PR work, raising awareness, communications, just in general, both that are standout in terms of their successes, as well as standouts in terms of, you know, their shortcomings or their failures or their learning opportunities, or just the head scratchers that come about of them saying, how did you guys get that wrong? Or how did this not work out? Or how did you not see this coming, type deal?
I think the biggest thing is a lot of charities or events or not-for-profits look at communications and PR as a nice to have. Whereas we obviously, I'm biased because I work in the PR world, but for us, it's a must have. If you're trying to raise money and you have no profile, that's going to be tough. And we talk a lot about storytelling in my world, but it goes back to the crux of everything that you do. What is your story? And that's the thing we do with all kinds of organizations, whether they're not-for-profits or big multinationals. What is your story? Whether you're selling, you're always selling something, whether it's a widget or a, you know, an idea or a cause, you always have to dig a little deeper to figure out what's going to make people tick. We've had many clients that come to us and they're like, well, you know, we sent a release to CTV. They didn't cover our event. Like, well, you know, when Kimothy left CTV, she was getting close to 300 emails a day to cover events, anything from a bake sale, your lovely bake sale, to, you know, politicians doing ribbon cuttings and, you know, ministers showing up or whatever. So you really have to stand out. And this is what we try to do with our organizations that we're helping, whether it's a small not-for-profit or a big organization. I've been lucky. I did a little bit of work a couple of years ago with Cornerstone Women's Shelter. They came to us a little bit later in the game, and they were bringing in Amanda Lindau, who is a journalist that got captured in Somalia. And they were bringing her for a speech. And they weren't doing that well in terms of tickets, but they were just kind of doing the usual. You know, they were sending a couple emails here and a couple emails there. And I was like, well, let's promote the fact that this lady is her story when it came out was huge. So let's capture that. And then we actually got them a front page in the local paper and got them a little bit of press, which always goes in a big, and sometimes the story isn't about your charity, but sometimes when you get piggyback, the story wasn't about the women's shelter when we pitched the Amanda story, but it was about, obviously, Amanda was overcoming struggle, being captive and for a while in a third world country, and then overcoming that struggle. And then, oh, and by the way, she's speaking at this event. So sometimes, especially if you've got a big name coming to town, it's sometimes not about your charity. It's about the big name, and then slowly kind of, you know, planting some seed with your organization or your event. And then you'll see that, and especially with this organization, they came to us fairly late. So it's hard to sell a couple hundred tickets with a week to go, but sometimes then you just plant seeds and you'll see that if you, the more media you get, most of the time it might not happen. It might not have an impact the next day, but it'll most likely have an impact in the next weeks and then sometimes the next months if you keep that momentum up.
No, Eric, I think you bring up a lot of really good points there. More specifically, I was really captured by the point you made about people thinking that PR is something nice to have, and when in reality, it's something that's a must have. Coming from a PR background myself, a lot of what you're touching upon, I'm just kind of like looking at Christian nodding my head, even though you can't see that, in agreement, because a lot of great points you bring up. And I would love to segue into the fact that in your long career working with charities and nonprofits, are there any standout stories of people moving beyond the bake sale that you often point to as the gold standard? Because at the end of the day, in PR, we always look to new trends and shifting trends and shifting strategies based on new tools and technology and as they evolve. So is there a gold standard for you that you see across the board that you're like, this is what you should strive for, this is what you should try to achieve?
What I like to see is people and organizations doing different stuff. And in Ottawa, one of the reasons we started the Amazing People Gala is to give a gala experience for people that don't usually go to a gala. I mean, in Ottawa and every major city in the world, I'm assuming, there are tons of galas. Rubber Chicken, it's the same 100 people with white hair that show up, a lot of people with money, and there's nothing wrong with that. You need those folks. But then there's not much cross-pollinization. There's not much excitement building because it's just these people go to these galas all the time. Yes, we'll cut a check for a couple thousand bucks. What we really try to do is do the un-gala and make sure that the attendees and the people, they leave with a feeling. They leave with something, not just a tax receipt. Because that's been kind of the default is, okay, you're going to come to this gala, it's going to cost you $200, you'll get a $100 tax receipt. The average person nowadays, they don't care, especially if you're looking for the next generation. They want to get behind something. They want to tweet about it. They want to share videos. They want to let them do that. But if you have 10 speeches by boring speakers, then you're completely destroying your event. And we see this all the time. So when we plan the gala, we really try to, okay, what kind of fun stuff can we get into throughout the dinner? One that we had, and this is our first gala about 5 years ago, we had a flash mob, which was like, people are like, what's going on here? But we want to make sure that people, we want to be completely different so that people talk about it. They talk about it even with their neighbors at the water cooler the next day. We talk about it on social media. So that people are talking about something that's different. It's not the same rubber chicken with the same 5 to 10 boring speakers. We had no speeches other than one thank you from the local the charity recipient. But that's one thing is a lot of folks just do the form stuff. Okay, we'll have these people say 5 minutes and then these people say 5 minutes. And next thing you know, like you've got an hour of speeches. And there's not that many great speakers, especially when you're talking about folks that are just like saying thank you for 5 minutes, it's just not that inspiring. So how can you insert fun at every point? So, I mean, there's been some great, cool campaigns in Ottawa. The Boys and Girls Club did one recently that did some really cool stuff. The Camp Smitty did one where their entire theme was about camp. So the dinner was camp themed and in dessert was a s'more. A s'mores inspired dessert. Again, these little things don't seem like they do much, but they really add into the, you got to put yourself in the shoes of the attendee or the shoes that are of the recipient. How can we get these people involved and share true stories as opposed to having a figurehead there that's bored out of his mind? Like the more excitement you can get for people, the more excitement they're going to carry on throughout, whether it's the evening or the campaign or any of that stuff.
No, that's great. That all sounds great, Eric. Thanks a lot. In terms of, well, we obviously talked about the gold standard, but then now we're going to shift to what have been some of the horror stories of nonprofits and charities having their PR communication go horribly wrong? Because, I mean, in PR, it's like you mentioned, people kind of frame PR professionals to be crisis communicators, essentially, kind of only show up when there's something terrible happening. And this will be one of those moments. So what would you say are some horror stories you've come across of crisis communication when dealing with nonprofits?
Unfortunately, there's too many to mention. A lot of the times is they call us at the last minute. They plan something internally, and there's nothing wrong with that. But then if it doesn't go the way they want to, then they're like, okay, they call us at the 11th hour and say, can you rescue our event? It's like, well, your event's in a week. there's only so much we can do. But again, it goes back to the point I was making earlier about the communications and PR. It should be at the central planning stage, not just an afterthought. Oh, by the way, we're going to have to send a couple of tweets and maybe send a news release. Well, it should be, okay, who can we involve at the beginning? Who are some of our champions? What great stories can we share? Especially nowadays, when I started in PR, it was mostly news releases and you tried to get into the media, and that was your only avenue, basically. Now, with social media, obviously it does take a little bit more time and a few different skills, but there's more of a level playing field so that small charities can have as big of an impact as the big ones. They just have to think outside the box. If you just put out a tweet every week about, oh, by the way, our gala's coming up, well, that doesn't really get me all jazzed up to go to your event. Tell me what's special about your event. Show me a video of last year's event. Show me where the money's going to. Really kind of build a storyboard on why your event is different than the other hundreds of galas, especially in Ottawa. Every weekend in the prime gala season, there's more than one event. So, and most people, especially if you work in PR, you get invited to a lot of these events. So where should I put my time? And where should I put my money? And I'm not going to be able to give to everyone, but usually if you build a little bit of a crowd, then you'll kind of carve out your niche. And then you go from there and you do things differently, not just having, again, that rubber chicken and then maybe a couple of silent auction items and then call it a night. Because if you're bored with it, then the people in the audience are bored with it.
No, that sounds about right. I mean, planning a lot of events, when you see that you're engaged with the event planning and the event when it's being executed, you can obviously get a good feel for the room in terms of your audience really buying into what you've just organized.
One more thing I would add is try to bring different folks on the organizing committee too. We've been lucky. We brought, it wasn't all the same people that have been on the same committee for 10 years. So we had people from different generations. Brought some young folks, some older folks, some different industries that they were in, and different backgrounds, so that you can get a little bit of that diversity conversation happening before the night up. So someone younger might say, okay, maybe we need a Twitter board the night up, where someone that's in their 60s, that might not be their first thing that they think about when they think about the night of the event. They might think more about sponsor, you know, make sure that we thank this person and this person. So having people of different walks of life, different ages, and thinking about that ahead of time really kind of, I find, really helps you on the night of. You don't want to cater to, if you try to sell something to everyone, you're selling to no one, but you still want to be able to have a little something for every, especially if you have a diverse crowd the way that we did at the Amazing People. We had folks that, most of the folks, it was their first gala. So we really tried to go all out for them. And there are some folks that are the usual gala folks, that, you know, the usual gala goers. And then we try to keep it fun for them as well.
Most definitely. So, Eric, I'm going to backtrack a little bit, because some of the central themes I'm getting from a lot of what we've been talking about so far are kind of, there's always these nice to haves, there's the we don't really need these, and there's the absolutely have to have these. And through what we've talked about as well, experimentation is a big part of figuring out what are those things we absolutely need moving forward. And based on you going to so many events and galas and through hosting the Amazing People Gala, as well as seeing other organizations hosting those events, what are some of those examples of things that you've either experimented with or seen other people experiment with that have been super well received and now are on your checklist of, you know what, we absolutely need to include these? And on the flip side, what are those things that are always included on your list that are like, you know what, we just can't do that. That's like shooting ourselves in the foot. That's the equivalent of us hosting a bake sale right here on the floor of this event that people are just going to curl up into a ball and just want to roll out.
My philosophy, and I use this in a lot of my day-to-day stuff, is less is more. Concentrate on the 3, 4, 5 things that you can really pull off and then go with that. Because a lot of times charities are going to the well too many times. You got to come in. You know, obviously you have to buy your ticket to go to one of these events. Obviously, if it's a bake sale, it's something a little different. But if it's a gala event or an event of some sort, you got your ticket entrance. Then they ask you for raffle tickets. Then they ask you for silent auction. Then they ask you for live auction. Then they ask you for, sometimes they'll keep envelopes underneath the centerpiece. And then next thing you know, like, you're getting hit like 6 or 7 times for money. And there's only so many people in the room. So you just have to pick, like, I tell you, just pick a couple that'll make you a little bit different than other folks. I had a couple of events where they had a special guest auctioneer for some of the cool events. And that's fun because then it's the person, the auctioneer brings out his or her own flavor. And that makes it a little bit more special as opposed to sometimes the MCs are not the best auctioneers. And so knowing, also you have to know kind of what kind of crowd that is in the room. One of the drawbacks of having everyday people, for example, at the Amazing People Galas, these are not the people with deep pockets sometimes. So we knew that having a live auction wouldn't really work for us because there's not that many people that can fork out a couple $1,000 for a trip to Barbados or, you know, a Costa Rica vacation or something. But so you have to kind of know your crowd and see, okay, what would be appealing to them and kind of keep that in mind. And especially for speeches or anything that's kind of that routine stuff, less is more. Have a couple people share stories. And sometimes, like, instead of saying thank you 20 times to the same sponsors, just have a slide on a PowerPoint that'll kind of provide that information as opposed to, because a lot of times you have speakers that come up and they say the same thank yous of the people before them and the same thank yous of the people after them. So they're not really bringing anything different. But if you do have speakers, try to keep them very short, very scripted, saying, okay, we're bringing you on stage. This is what we hope for you to bring. And like, I usually tell my speakers, okay, you have 3 minutes. And after 3 minutes, there's a sniper going up. So every time, especially if people are nervous, they're going to go on and on and on. And next thing you know, you're 8 minutes. And it's this
guy. Oh, do they ever?
This guy hasn't really, or this lady hasn't said anything. So we really tried to keep it fun. Now it's getting much better. But back, I remember going to a couple of galas about a decade ago. There was no speeches during dinner. They would always wait till everyone's done their food. Well, that drags out the evening for like another 2 hours. So use that time as efficiently as possible to, people can listen when they're eating. A lot of these people, they have somewhere else to be, especially in this day and age. Most of us have a couple events to go to a night. Like obviously I'm not the mayor that I have to go to 17 events, but sometimes I have to go to a couple of different things. So be very wary of people's time and be mindful of that so that they can kind of look forward to going back to your event next year. Because the more you provide value that night, one, the more they're more likely to open their wallet, and especially if you can make that connection. But two, if they're bored out of their mind, the next year they're probably going to find saying, you know what, not that night, I've got to wash my hair or you know, like, I got to babysit my cousin or something like that. Because it's just, we've all been to events where you're like, I'm never going back to this event.
So you don't even. And even if they promise like improvement or they say that, hey, this is now a much better event, you should come and check it out again, you're kind of trying to still fighting your old feelings. You're trying to have a fight with them.
Whereas if you get people that are, especially if you can shoot some video and showcase that excitement of people laughing, people singing, people dancing, like you can show that it's a good time. It's not just a typical, you know, boring dinner where everyone's like looking at their watch every 5 minutes.
Oh, most definitely. So, and it's always really awkward when your bald friend comes up to you and says, oh, I'm sorry, I'm washing my hair that night. You're like, wait a minute, there might be something going on here. I actually wanted to follow up on something that you were talking about, Eric. And it also prompted me to remind myself about a quote that one of my mentors always gives me. It says, Christian, the mind can only absorb what the bottom can endure. So if you keep dragging things out, then eventually your butt's just going to say no more and you're just going to walk out of the room. But going back to the story that you're using earlier about the reporter who had been in prison in Somalia and had just been released, and then Cornerstone using that as an opportunity to really promote their brand and their cause after the fact and not necessarily focusing solely on that to recruit people for the event to attend. Have you seen any other examples of charities or nonprofits that have taken that similar approach and really used the speaker they brought in or some kind of cause awareness building around an event or another initiative to really catapult the awareness for their brand? And have you seen some ones where they've essentially squandered an opportunity where maybe they have a very famous person or influential person part of their event or their organization, but then didn't use them in the best way to push their brand forward and get awareness about their cause out there?
Actually, yeah, there was another speaker another event that I attended that was really well done. It was Options by Town, and they had Frank O'Day, who's the founder of Second Cup. He's very involved with Second Cup, and I don't know if you ever heard him speak. Very, very good speaker, very engaging, former homeless youth, and now he's a multimillionaire. But again, they didn't, like, it was one of those things I just kind of stumbled upon the event. I don't think it was, and I think this is very standard for most not-for-profits or most charity events. they're not very well marketed. They just assume that their folks are going to come and then they're doing the usual stuff. But if you keep doing what you've always done, you're going to get the results you always have. So if you do have a special speaker, one of the biggest things I found is get out of your comfort zone and get out of your crowd. Like Frank O'Day is an incredible speaker, but there was only about 100 people that night. And it was the same people that you would see at most Options by Town events. So if you really talk about the fact that Frank O'Day is a speaker, or even if you don't, most people don't know his name, I say, you know what, former homeless youth, now millionaire. But again, it's going back to most of the time, especially if you've got a big ticket item, whether it's a good speaker or who would be interested in that? I would have probably partnered with a local business school, for example. And then doing some cross promotion that way to get people involved, because he's in the business world, he's got a cool name and cool story. So doing those things, those partnerships, a lot of times charities and not-for-profits, they know that if they partner, they're going to have to probably give up a little bit of money or something. And it's whereas I find if we partner, then both people can win. If you get more people to your event, yes, you might give a percentage, like a few cents on a dollar. But at the end of the day, you're making more dollars. So it's getting out there, and especially nowadays, you have to be innovative, because it's not like the resources are growing, and it's not like people are making, I mean, they're giving more money away, but there's more and more charities, more and more options. So I think these partnerships, and sometimes, and especially the wacky partnerships, are the stuff that works. And we're seeing that in Ottawa and other cities with the social enterprises. You got some folks that are making dog food, or folks that are doing cookies or any kind of just cool, innovative. People want different stories. And if you're always doing the same thing, you're basically, like, especially if you have a gala every year, how are you going to shake things up? Because at the end of the day, like, yes, there's going to be a few people that are going to go just because it's your gala and they know your organization, they want to support. But those numbers are going to go down year and year in, year in, year out. So how are you going to make it different this year? And I'm talking about especially for the yearly or the quarterly or whatever event. Same thing with bake sales. How is your bake sale going to be different? Are you going to have a pie eating contest? Are you going to have everyone baking the same thing and making a popularity contest? Because we've all been to bake sales, and a lot of them suck.
Is that the technical term for, yeah. Is that the technical term in the PR marketing communications world?
Yeah.
And they don't raise that much money.
You know, truer words have never been spoken. And hearing some of the examples of using the written word and things like that to really get people excited about your event is just music to my ears. No? Music to my ears? Joke.
Yeah.
No, he makes a joke. Yeah, no, thank you, Eric. I'm glad you did not entertain that joke, because I don't.
I take all laughs. I take any laugh I can get.
That was amazing.
Eric, don't encourage it. Do not encourage it.
Just add it to the words for tonight. So to kind of start to round things off a little bit, Eric, I want to dive a little bit into some of your volunteer work, because you've been involved over the years with a number of charities and are involved with a number of them right now, including Kids Up Front Ottawa and then the Banff Avenue Community House. Are there any examples from them, or any examples from other organizations that you've worked with who either have kind of moved beyond that bake sale model of fundraising, not necessarily just for events, but also for awareness building, for fundraising campaigns, or any other organizations that you've been involved with in a volunteer capacity that you've seen have really given you some exemplary examples of fundraising and cause awareness building and kind of all those things that we're talking about?
Yeah, I think there's been some cool examples. I think Kids Up Front is one that's come up to my side. So for Kids Up Front, for those who don't know, they try to repurpose tickets. Event tickets, whether it's theater or sporting events that don't get used. So a lot of corporations, for example, will have like SENS tickets. And okay, well, Tuesday night against the Islanders, no one cares. So no one's going to go. So all these tickets go unused. So what they do is they partner with local agencies that to build capacity. So they get tickets and then they'll redistribute them through their network. So local kids from, you know, Boys and Girls Club or the community center can go to see a game. And they're using a lot of their connections, and obviously to the SEND and OSEG. And we got them a partnership with Alex Mateus, who's one of the local Red Blacks players who won a Grey Cup last year, was a CFL All-Star this year. And we did a little thing that we got some Grey Cup tickets for this year. And we got Alex involved in game to some local kids. So imagine, one, you're getting free Grey Cup tickets that were, you know, it's a sold out event, and it's only, I don't know how many people were there, 40,000. You know, it's a fairly big event. You're getting tickets. Plus, Oh, by the way, this guy, Alex Mateus, who's a monster of a man, and he's got this huge Grey Cup ring, he's going to deliver them to you personally.
Oh, that's so awesome. What an experience.
And he's a local guy. He's just one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. So, and then obviously then you build that kind of, so it's again, it going back to just going that one step further, I think really, and then people now they associate Kids Up Front with a fun kind of community thing as opposed to a burden on the community.
Oh, absolutely. And it really plays into the part that we've been talking about a lot of this time in figuring out those new means of really getting your message out there. Having a local celebrity or sports star is an avenue of promotions and of just engaging with a certain target audience that we wouldn't have imagined, 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago, especially with the advent of social media, making their reach that much bigger and just really adding to that experience. That is so cool. Before we go, we want to know, what are some of the cool things that you're working on the next little bit in the cause space? What can people help with? They're looking to, give their time, talent, and treasure, or help to raise awareness about a cause and are looking for something meaningful to do.
The cool thing in Ottawa, there's so many causes, charities, not-for-profits that are doing some cool work. And in one of our, we've got Sam LaPrade that joined Ottawa Media Group recently, and she's a pillar of the local community. And she did a presentation at one of the events that I put on last year. And the one thing she really kind of, that's really stuck with me, and instead of, and this is not to disparage the big guys that are doing some cool stuff, but pick something that's really dear to your heart, and then go and work in that space. There's nothing wrong with the Boys and Girls Clubs of the world or the United Ways of the world. They're doing some incredible stuff. But a little organization like the Banff Avenue Community House, there's 14 community houses around Ottawa that are doing some incredible work, and they're doing stuff in the community. Like, I go to the Banff Community House, and I see kids that's from my neighboring community, and I can see the impact that some of the work that we're doing is having. So pick, especially if you pick a smaller charity, you can have some real big impact. So Sam was talking about donations. So if you're giving $1,000 to United Way, and it's going to get spread around, and it's great, and there's nothing wrong with that. But imagine that $1,000 for a small charity, whether maybe you love pets, then go to a shelter and then donate maybe $500, but then donate a few hours of your time, and you can really see and see that impact of that money and that time that you spent. Or if you like kids, then donate some time for the kids. Or if you have you're affiliated with the church, do that. Or whatever really you gets you jazzed up, whether it's sports and reading, whatever is in your heart, you're going to find way more meaning if you do something that you enjoy. The cool thing is most organizations, if you come to them and say, here's what I want to do and how can I help you, they're not going to say no. And I do a lot of talks at local colleges and universities, and a lot of people ask me, how can I give back? I said, just pick an organization and use your skills. One, you're going to feel so much better about your skills and your time and yourself. And two, you're going to provide some real value. Like, for example, if I go and sell 50-50 tickets at the Sens game, that might not be the best way for me to give back. But if I go and help a local charity that needs some help with some PR, that for me is a better use of my time, because that's a little more targeted. I think I'm decent at PR and I can kind of do this stuff. I mean, I'm sure I can probably sell a couple of 50-50 tickets, but I think there's other people that are way more suited to that. So that's usually what I tell people. Just try to pick something, especially the smaller, the better, because then you can really see the impact and you can really feel good about some of the stuff you're doing. And the more you feel good and the more you see the impact, the more you're more likely to do more.
Eric, truer words have never been spoken. And I think I can speak for both Nash and myself, as well as for all the nonprofits and charities you've helped over the years, in their appreciation for your sharing of your time, your expertise, your talent, your treasure, in terms of whether it's specific skills you brought to the table or actual monetary contributions, as well as helping to raise awareness for so many worthy causes through Amazing People Gala, through the work you've done, through serving on boards and committees, and just being an all-around, really accessible person to share a lot of your best practices. So we'd really like to say thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Eric.
For sharing your time, us. And we'll make sure to link all the different organizations that you've talked about today, Ottawa Media Group, as well as all the charities you work with, as well as how that people can connect with you through social media and whatever other means. And we look forward to hopefully having another conversation at another time.
Yeah, thank you. One more thing. One of the things for me is, yes, it's fun to give back, but I get so much out of it. And I know it sounds it sounds cliche, but I get so much out of the stuff that I give, and that's kind of why I do it. And especially when you can connect with folks that are like-minded, like you two, it's incredible. It's amazing.
Thank you so much for saying so, Eric. Oh, and we have one final question we have to ask you. Do you commit from here on out to continue to move beyond the bake sale when it comes to raising time, talent, treasure, and awareness for the causes that you care about?
Yes, let's do something different. And that's the thing that we've done at Auto Media, something we've done with amazing people. And mm-hmm. I'm all for it. We less boring, more fun. And there's nothing wrong. Like, we put the fun in fundraising. There's nothing wrong with that.
I like that. We're probably gonna have to steal that at some point. We'll repurpose it. That's the word we're going with. Well, thank you so much, Eric, and we hope everyone enjoyed this episode. Make sure to tune in next time for our next episode, where we'll help you to continue to raise more time, talent, treasure, and awareness for the causes you care about, and really help you to move beyond that big sale in every way, shape, and form. So thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
This is Christian.
And this is Nash.
And thanks for tuning in to another episode of Beyond the Big Sale.
Like what you heard today?
Then follow, like, and subscribe to our podcast.
And if you really like what you heard, then rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
Have feedback or you want to get in touch with us?
Visit our website at www.beyondthebakesale.ca.
And above all, thanks for committing to moving beyond the bake sale. Music for this episode was done by Ryan O'Grady. You can find more of his work or book him at www.ryanpatrickogrady.com.
This is Christian.
And this is Nash.
And thanks for tuning in to another episode of Beyond the Bake Sale.
Like what you heard today? Then follow, like, and subscribe to our podcast.
And if you really like what you heard, then rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
Have feedback or you want to get in touch with us? Visit our website at www.beyondthebakesale.ca.
And above all, thanks for committing to moving Beyond the Bake Sale. Music for this episode was done by Ryan O'Grady. You can find more of his work or book him at www.ryanpatrickogrady.com.